Which brings us to the next application, and I believe this is an application for 70 acres by Mr. Price.
We have a lot of same issues here on this. So again, Mr. Steven Edward Topping Bryce applied for another lease, 70 acres in Rappahannock River in Lancaster County. This is also protested by a number of nearby property residents. Again, you've seen this picture before. You know where we are. This is the bridge. It's Rappahannock. We're not talking about this application. This is the actual surveyed footprint. So for this application, as you can see, there are a few piers here. We'll zoom in a minute. But along this whole section of shoreline, it was surveyed pretty close to the shore. Again, this was surveyed by Bay Design Group. I'm not sure we would survey just quite as close to the shore as they did had we done it. But I think we'd still be here because we would have gotten close enough that I think the residents would still object. This one has a lot of the same protest, basically, for this one as the last one, a combination of recreational use of the near shore area, issues with there might be SAV in the area, and a commercial operation in a generally residential area, and navigation concerns. So this is the actual plat. As you can see, it pretty much hugs the shoreline for most of the application. And as surveyed, it contains 73.87 acres. When we reviewed the SAV maps from VIMS in this area, there is some SAV, as this is a continuation of the area we just looked at. It goes through this lease, which is an older lease, and goes out and kind of hits this point. So we felt like we might need to remove that from the application, just from an SAV perspective. So staff's compromise on this one was to draw a line from this existing surveyed corner, staying offshore, to this existing surveyed corner. Again, this is still relatively close to the shoreline. The reason that we propose this a little closer than we did on the previous one is there are no piers here, and we don't believe there'll ever be any piers here. This is a spit of marsh. Not buildable. I don't think anyone's going to build a pier across Beach Creek, across the land, and out to here. That's possible. Whoever owns this, I guess, could build a pier, but you'd have to get in a boat to get to the pier, which wouldn't make much sense. This is a dynamic area. Beach Creek has definitely changed over the years, as was alluded to by some of the longtime residents. And this is the currently the way to get in and out. So we did, when we evaluated, we had some real concerns about this spot in particular as to whether we should lease that or leave a gap. We didn't make it part of our recommendation at the moment. It's certainly up to the commission to evaluate this and whatever comments you get today. We are currently recommending at least staying this far offshore. This could be split into two parcels, with one starting here and going north, and another one starting here to leave off none of this leased. There is no real channel there much after you come out. It's pretty shallow all along here. But should the residents come up with enough money that they really want to try to dredge this and dredge out a ways, if we lease this, they would have to deal with the leaseholder, which could have adverse impacts on them being able to dredge. We just didn't feel like that probably was going to happen. It cost a lot of money to do. We think it would fill back in pretty quickly if you dredged outside the mouth here. It's pretty dynamic. We are aware that this shoreline, as you can see, is a nice sandy shoreline. We believe it is heavily used, particularly in the warm weather months, by the local residents, people from across the river who may know these. This is a nice sandy beach. We're sure it's used considerably. So we felt at a minimum we should move the line out to there. And we did that and possibly also cut off this area, which I don't have here. and draw a line over to 13. But if we just eliminate this, it would drop the acreage by about 9 acres. In light of the recent decision on the other one, you know, you may want to, again, modify this to further offshore. That's up to the commission. And if you accept some more, of course, testimony on this one, I think you're going to hear from some of the same people. Because some of the people that spoke at the last one actually live here,
right,
not in front of where the other one is. So our recommendation at the moment is what you see here. This would require no new corners to be set. Some corners could be removed. And, of course, the plat would have to be adjusted.
Other questions from the commission? Mr. Zeder.
I have some concern. From the testimony on the last one, from some of the residents and everything, they seem to say at some time in history, the SAB was all up and down there, and that's where all the crabbing was and everything like that. Is there any consideration for us in leasing this to, you know, what about where do we leave land for maybe some growth of SAB to come back into the area? And so why would we lease that is the question when there's a possibility that, or is there a possibility that the SAB may come back to the whole area?
Well, Dems may be better prepared to answer that question. I did look back beyond, you know, just the 5 years. If you go way back, I think the residents are right. There was SAV in this area. But from this point, particularly north, it's really been very, very little in the last 10-plus years. I'm not saying that it couldn't come back. Dems may want to comment on whether they think that's a possibility in this area. We are currently working on our SAV policy related to leasing to address what you just said, not just where is the current SAV and how far back do we look at when we're looking at a lease, but what about potential restoration or areas that may repopulate into the future. And at the moment, we're just kind of using a five-year running total for current applications. We certainly would look at an area and when it's the questions raised with VIMS and get their input on what they think the potential into the future is. And you can certainly have them answer that question today if they would like to try.
Mr. Zeder.
What effect are the cages going to have on that mouth of that river or creek shallowing up?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm not an engineer, even though I used to be an environmental engineer, but I'm not really a professional engineer. I don't know that we can really answer that question with any certainty. This is a dynamic area that this creek mouth has changed a number of times over the years. Any object in the water could have some impact about the climate of the mouth of this creek and this beach, but it is eroding back, I can tell you that. It's I don't think the land's accreting here, but it's dynamic.
One second, Mr. Tankard. Mr. Zedron, do you want to hear from Virginia Institute of Marine Science?
Yeah, I think it's an important issue here because that also affects navigation.
Dr. Luckenbach.
Right. So Dr. Orth is not here, and he's our SAV expert, but I can speak to this. First, with respect to what we've been formally doing, or been doing and are formalizing now as a process, is on any of these sites, we review 5 years previous, which is really, because you don't have the year they're applying in usually, goes back 6 years from present. And if we see any SAV there, we have density categories, one that's literally from greater than 0 to 10. And we've been pushing pretty hard to protect that really low density, because what we see from year to year as we get particularly dry years and the SAV expands, the dense beds aren't what's expanding. The areas that had low densities are expanding into being dense. Okay, so we really, I know that you were out pretty far and you can only see a little bit of those, but we're recommending, and VMRC's been following, to draw that SAV bed line around anything that we've seen any SAV over the past 5 years. And as Ben says, he frequently, because the images are all there, he flips through back even further. Now, speaking way to the past, the SAV species that we've got here, historically, there could have been found in some cases down to the 2-meter depth contour. I don't think we've, and the biggest die-off, single die-off, took place after Tropical Storm Agnes. Huge amount of sediments, really big dieback. The Bay Program, and I'm going to use that so it's for both states because I'm not sure I remember how to break it down per state right now. Christy might know more, might know the area in the in Virginia. It might be 73 or 93. 77. 77 is the state level. 77,000 acres of SAV as a target area. You know, it's an aspirational target. That's tier one, and it's areas that have had SAV in the past are suitable for SAV down to a meter depth. The thought process is that if we can even get water quality to the point, as we improve water quality, and we have been pretty significantly, that's the first part to really be concerned about protecting. Now, if any of this, and it doesn't sound like this is the place that would do it, if you can get deeper than 6 feet, then you're really out of SAV habitat for the species we have here. That doesn't sound like that applies at this particular spot. But we're doing what we can to be very conservative in terms of protecting even the very, very sparsely populated, rather ephemeral SAV beds, because that's where we see the spread. As water quality improves, those get moved to medium and then high density. Any other questions?
Mr. Ballard.
So if I can take the liberty of just paraphrasing you, because I was involved in those SAV meetings, but essentially what you're saying is the view VMRC is taking when evaluating these lease applications is extremely conservative based on your views.
I think it's appropriately conservative.
Appropriately
probably
conservative.
Extremely conservative based on the shellfish aquaculture.
True.
Views, and it's probably too liberal based upon the environmental community views.
True. Appropriately conservative. Yes. But VMRC did not find, with that appropriately conservative measure here, SAV to be an issue in this lease. Otherwise, I don't think we'd even be sitting here.
In lease, I don't doubt one bit, historically, though, that this was an area that had good, rich grass beds. And I would affirm that if it did, it was well before I was in Virginia, if it did in this type of area, dense, rich grass beds could indeed have stabilized that sediment and protected that inlet. That point that was made earlier is absolutely what we would expect to happen with good, dense grass beds.
And those beds would have been eel and widgeon?
They would have been mostly eel, yeah. Mm-hmm. Widgeon grass, as you know, isn't going to get you a lot of stability. Mm-hmm. Now, the other point is we don't know from these aerials what percentage of that is eel grass or widgeon. Widgeon is just a more ephemeral grass that comes and goes, and it's valuable, but the eel grass is what, if it was really stabilized in the inlet, it would have been dense eel grass beds, which is what I expect it was pre-1972, and possibly somewhat beyond.
Mr. Zedra.
Is this an area that BIMS would be considering to plant eel grass?
Probably not, given a couple things. We've done a lot of test plots in a lot of places, and the places that the issue in the bay still is water clarity. And so places where the water clarity is good enough and the testing indicates it and the sediment conditions are right, there has been a fair amount of planting. Now grass beds out around the mouth of the Rappahannock and up to the north, they've been expanding pretty rapidly, actually in the bay. There's been improving water quality there, and those are expanding. So I don't want to speak for Dr. Worthy precisely. I don't know exactly where he's tried test beds. We've tried a lot of test beds, and the main point is to be guided by where we see water quality improving and where we see grass is already starting to expand, indicating that we could speed it up with seeds. That's the type of thing, to be honest with you, that those sort of bigger decisions, oh, we're seeing expansion in this area, this could be targeted in the coming years, could easily fit within your five-year permitting, arrangement on permitting if you've got higher structures. Of course, if you've got a lease and they're on the bottom, then they've got them.
Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Stagg, is there anything to add at this point? I'm going to open up for public comment.
I'll only add that, since I mentioned it, that we have taken the approach on a few of these applications where this has been an issue, that perhaps a permit might be more appropriate than a lease. So if they picked some spots here that were further offshore, where they wouldn't create the issues with the people on shore, that they could request a habitat permit for cages, and we would not lease it. It would be a permit. Then you can put conditions on the permit, different than the 12-inch on-bottom regulation, which basically says you get the right to put cages, sans navigation issues. So I really feel that this one is more problematic than the previous one because of the mouth of this creek and the really dynamic nature here. But the other one did have SAV issues, which we think we've avoided. This one we didn't really see much in the way of in recent years, SAV. Historically, I agree that if you go back far enough, probably was SAV here. But I don't want to get the cart in front of the horse. You haven't heard people testify on this one yet either.
So. Well, Evan,
one more question.
Mr. Tanker.
So, Mr. Tagg, was this ever leased before?
I don't think so. Because, again, I'm not sure that this would have been conducive to on-bottom type activity. But this is, this type of bottom is now a prime type of bottom to do cage aquaculture because the bottom is firm. It's good water flow here. So it's very suitable to cages because it's, they'll sit here, they won't sink. But we are seeing a lot of applications in these type of areas near the shore where we didn't traditionally get applications in the past.
Thank you.
All right. Let's take some public comment. What I'm going to do is I'm going to incorporate into the record, in this case, the testimony from the previous case so that we all heard it, we all know what you said. But if there's somebody that wants to come forward here and address this issue specifically for this application that we haven't heard before, keep that in mind. But before we get to that point, I'm going to let Mr. Bryce take the first crack at this since it's his application. So if you come forward, Mr. Bryce.
Can I let my daughter speak?
You can absolutely let your daughter speak.
Perfect. Thank you very much. My dad's recently tour attendant, so it's easier for me to stay seated.
Absolutely. Here.
Honestly, when I said earlier we want to be good neighbors, we mean it. We want to grow our business, but we also want to be good stewards of the environmental resources the state or the Commonwealth provides and let our neighbors share with us. So we are more than happy, just let the baby in your words before, in this case, come off as the commission seems appropriate, and also if necessary, we're happy to create an access to the channel or what into the mouth of Beach Creek to meet the needs of the community.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Stagg put something on the table here for, I think, more for your consideration than anything else. Okay. That instead of leasing all of this, you put in apply for a permit to set a certain number of cages in a certain place and ask for a permit to use that water bottom as opposed to leasing that entire water bottom. That way, you'll have space for your cages, but they'll be in a specific and confined location, and then we don't have to worry about whose boating access rights get in and out. It's an option for you to withdraw this application and instead go for a permit that I'm sure that would be expedited by our Habitat Management Division. He said to Mr. Tony Watkinson, the chief of the Habitat Management Division.
I'm anxious to do something I don't understand. I'm going to trust the commission's judgment if that's what we need to do.
I'm saying that's an option, and it's an option for you. I'm not sure how this comes out here for you, but that might be something that you might find to be a better community relation building exercise.
Sure. is it possible to go forward with the lease but work with the Habitat Division and members of the community to plot that out? That way we don't, because I don't understand if we lose rights to that if somebody else puts in a lease, an application for a lease.
Real concern.
We have ways.
Okay.
I didn't mean to complicate this too much, but I will caveat this by saying they have applied for this lease and they put some considerable expense into this. They hired a private firm to do this, who they're going to have to pay if they haven't paid already. If it was us, we would just say, if you withdraw this, we're done. You paid the application fee and advertising fee, and that's, you're out that money. We wouldn't charge them for the survey. If they don't get anything, we don't make them pay. So I wanted to add that layer so they understand it as well. But this is a mechanism we have offered to some people in this similar circumstance who were willing to do that. Most of them didn't already have the ground surveyed. They have encumbered a cost with this private company that's, I guarantee you, it's a minimum what we charge, $675, and probably more than that. So they may not want to have that option. Certainly we can continue with the lease. I'm not really suggesting that we permit on top of the lease. If they get the lease, they could put cages on it. But if they felt that a much smaller area here would work, and that would be easier to work with the adjacent landowners and maybe stay further offshore, and that is an option. But I don't want to force them into something. I don't think the commission does either, where they have to pay for this twice. JPA application is cheap. It's free, you know, to start with. And the permit fee would just be based on royalty on the amount of cages, which probably wouldn't equate to a whole lot more than they're going to pay for horse ground rent on this.
Well, in which case, then maybe the Bryce's best option is to proceed here now as the application has been presented and see how this works out, and then evaluate your options after the board's made its decision. So, no. You have nothing to lose that you're not already going to lose if you're going to lose anything with this application. So, why don't you come back here?
You could apply for a permit for a smaller area.
Okay.
So, I wasn't trying to head you off down a bad path. I just want to let you know that there would be another option regardless of how this comes out today, potentially. So, why don't you address the commission on this application, on this water bottom, on issues that we haven't heard already.
Sure. I mean, for this particular plot, it's very, very similar to the original. We obviously, we'll have spoken to the needs of the community and how we're willing to meet them. We applied for this particular piece, keeping in mind that it was our understanding that SAV here was just not an issue historically, and that's why it was of particular interest to us. So again, we will respect the SAV. We cherish it. I don't think anybody has to worry about that, but we'll do whatever the commission and staff thinks is appropriate.
Okay, we probably have some questions from the commission here. Mr. Ballard.
If I were to try and take a stab at what I would call an equitable solution, I would probably definitely carve out a channel and take even further offshore than the last one to give you just a little sliver towards the offshore pieces. And I guess I'm curious, are you even interested in something like that, or are we wasting our time trying to carve out a solution?
I think I have a hard time. It would help if somebody, I'm not great with spatial dynamics, the idea of the acreage to make sense and help me understand the financial ramifications of that, the ROI we would get for it.
Yeah, it'd be kind of a shot in the dark. But so the current survey, which goes all the way to the shore, is this acre. It's 73 point something. Just slicing this off drops it 10 acres. In light of what I think Mr. Ballard is saying is come offshore way out in here somewhere and shoot up here something.
With leaving a channel.
Right, and eliminate an area coming out the mouth of the channel. You know, again, don't hold me to this, this is hard and fast, but I would guess we'd be left with something like in the northern area 10 or 15 acres, and depending on how far out you started here, going up this way to the channel, maybe another 15 or 20 acres at the most.
I think given its proximity to our facility, it's worth moving forward on. It is smaller, but it is something that we can work with, and it'll make mine was larger, but we'll be.
So if that's the case, between the last application and these two lots, you would have significant business opportunities there.
Yes.
All right.
We're trying to be
reasonable. You're freaking selling them, aren't you? You're selling them, aren't you?
I'm trying to.
Okay, are there questions from the commission? Mr. France.
Yes. Mr. Stagg, is there any way that this could be leased with a stipulation in it that cages cannot be put in that channel area?
Quick answer is no.
Okay.
I think council can confirm that. But we have a regulation that once you have a lease, allows you to put cages up to 12 inches on it, provided they don't cause a navigation issue. So we have historically asked this question of legal counsel a number of times. Can we put a condition on a lease? Leases are completely governed by the Code of Virginia, and we think the answer is no.
Are there other questions from the commission?
Yeah, I got one more.
Mr. Zedron.
If we pull that line back 400 feet, where's that going to be?
Well, that's a good question.
And cut that corner off there, like you said.
Based on the previous one, I would say it would probably be right out about in, well, skip this point, start up here somewhere. Probably somewhere out maybe in there. You know, I'm not sure that's what Chad was saying. He was saying, I think, maybe even further than the previous one, more than 400 feet.
Mr. France.
Yeah, I had, I was looking at it here, and I had drawn a line from number 1 to 3 to protect the pier area.
Okay.
And then from 3 to 13, which takes it a little teeny bit further offshore than that line you have there.
Right.
And then at the bottom, it'll kind of protect that SAV area.
Right. Do that. That doesn't address the
channel
issue, but.
I'm having a hard time seeing the creek opening in that depiction of the 73.
Yeah, these little bees desired there, but
so if you
based on this drawing, say it's somewhere right about here, I think.
So go back to the photograph. So if you split it in half and went from the point to I guess that's south there, right? North, and leave yourself an opening there of the width of the creek.
We could come straight. If you want to move this further offshore, that's certain. There are some piers here.
Right.
Maybe some people here that didn't even speak yet. About how close this is. This is about the same distance off these piers as the previous one was, the way it was originally surveyed. We think it's typically adequate in most cases, so you can still navigate your boat around your pier without having to worry about
right.
it. You can still use the beach. You know, if you want to move this off further, you certainly could. But if you didn't change this line, you could come straight down. You're getting further away from shore all the time, cut it off here, and then again do something similar down here. Start out here somewhere, come over.
Right.
Get all down here.
Okay. I'm going to open up the floor for public comment. I think you all have been paying attention to hearing where the commissioners are kind of considering potential options. So I'm going to incorporate into the record for this case all the testimony from the last case. So you don't have to repeat yourself there. But if you'd like to come forward and, you know, tell us what you think about the options that are being presented here for the commission's consideration or the things that we're missing, please come on up. Please come on up, sir.
Hello again for the record, Mark Dodson, up here on the previous case.
Yes, sir.
And pretty much the same as there, except I have a question. He said that the, I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Mr. Stagg.
Mr. Stagg. We've talked many times on the phone. Yeah. Anyway, you did say it's a dynamic opening, which it is, and you said it's changed many times. Is that what you did say?
Well, it's my understanding.
Well,
we have so much historical.
Right. Okay. Well, it's changed once in 117 years. Okay. It's closed and open.
But I mean, the whole shoreline is what I meant.
Well, the shoreline's in flux, right, but I mean, right. the opening itself has moved from one spot to another in 117 years. Okay. And you also said that.
All right. Hold on.
Yes.
Let's address the commission.
Okay.
The commission's to make the decision here. Staff is to answer some of the questions that they may have. Tell us what you think about the potential options that the commission should consider. Is there anything that you've heard that you would agree with?
Well, no.
Okay.
I think it's going to spell the death knell of this creek opening half we go forward. And I just have one more question, but I think I heard it. You correct me if I'm wrong. He said, from this point A here, you know, that black line, he saw very little SAV. That's what I don't know what he's saying, but I'll be glad to take any of you out on my boat come October, the third week when the cloud is gone and you can see grass is down, not 5 feet, not 6 feet, but 10 feet. This whole red area is SAV, and when you put these cages on it, you're going to kill it and you're going to close our creek, and that's really the bottom line. So I got nothing more to say.
Okay. Is there anybody else who would like to be heard? Please come forward, sir.
Yes, again, my name is George Arnold. I'm on the other side of this, but I boat that area very frequently. And what I would add, my comment is to support what he was saying. Just in this last year and a half, we've seen a tremendous amount of grass at a significant depth. In the front cove there where you see that property just beginning, you can no longer take a boat in there. I have a flat bottom boat as well, and I can't get it through that anymore because the grass is so thick. It's now gone around the corner, and I'm sorry.
While there are no houses in this marsh area, you are starting to see the grass. In this area, I guess there is a dock. The problem that I would see is the sand has shifted so much that there's a sandbar, but I'm not sure I know how the boats are going to get into that dock area. So that's all I have to say.
Okay. Is there anybody else who wishes to be heard? Okay. The public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. What do you all want to do? Mr. Zedron.
In light of the history of this and the usage of it and everything, I would be inclined and I would move to deny the application and then to reserve this parcel of land so that it cannot be leased and then see if the SAV grows on it. And then, you know, if it doesn't, we'll address that later on. But it sounds like to me there's a lot of recreational use here. I'm concerned about the mouth of that river closing up. When you put those structures on the bottom, you're going to change that sand flow, and I don't know which way it's going to go, and it could close that up and as well. And once we lease this, it's done. We've talked about this permit process, and so if we deny this lease, I don't know if we make it a sanctuary or whatever we do to reserve it, but that's one option, or the other option is deny the lease and only allow permits there. So my motion is to deny the lease, period.
It's a motion by Mr. Zedron. Is Mr. Ballard?
I could be on board with denying the lease. I feel like we tried to carve up the other application and reach a good compromise. I do feel for the recreational users of this area, and the entry to that creek is concerning to me. I would be starkly against creating a set aside for SAV without having a proper plan or creating any kind of permanent action like a set aside. I believe in looking at these things on a case-by-case basis, as we have been doing. So if someone in a couple months wanted to apply for this because they had some evidence that there was no possibility of SAV or wanted to do another use, I'd be in favor of hearing it at that time rather than creating a permanent set-aside.
So Mr. Citron's motion is to deny the application, which would still, I'll note, allow the applicants to instead submit a joint permit application.
That is correct.
So I haven't heard a second. Is there a second to Mr. Zedron's motion? Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Second by Mr. Neal.
And I would have seconded Chad's cutting it smaller, too.
So we have a motion to deny the application and a second. Is there some discussion about this? Mrs. Lutz.
I see the difficulty in trying to cut this up, but I hate to see the applicant walk away without without anything from that space. I wouldn't say that I'm totally opposed to denying the application, but I would prefer, my preference would be to try and figure out a compromise in which they could at least get part of the ground that they've applied for.
Mr. Zedra.
What I would say in reference to my motion is that if we deny this permit, this lease, that staff work diligently with the applicant for a permit. And then the staff can direct where the pots go and put all the conditions it wants on it. But so that the understanding would be if we denied the lease, that staff would work with them diligently forthwith. And that way they get their what they want, really, and we get what we want.
That, I have a follow-up question.
Mrs. Les.
When you work to do the permits, what then... if someone else comes behind and tries to apply for that lease, what happens then?
Well, I was going to raise that question before you voted on the motion. So if you vote to deny this application in totality, and that's the motion only, then tomorrow, this afternoon, as soon as you vote, someone could apply for this again. And it might not be the applicant. It could be somebody else. We'll go through this again. Sure, because it'll get protested again. We are more than happy to work with the current applicant on a permit, but that's a separate type of issue. If someone applies for this before they submit a permit application, then we have to address the lease application first.
Well, Mr. Stagg, let me ask you a process-oriented kind of technical question here, and it's a bit hypothetical here. Mr. Zetron here amended his motion here to deny the application and to set aside this ground for 6 months, unavailable for lease. Would that be sufficient time to, in order to get a joint permit application duly considered and either approved or before the board for approval?
Certainly. It's up to the applicant how fast they get it, but once it's in, then that would take precedence over any competing lease application that we received after that.
Mrs. Everett.
You mentioned before expedited permit review. If a JPA goes in, what is that 6 months sufficient timing? Because they've put this application in 2 years ago, correct? Or over 2 years ago?
Well, we will act upon the commission's direction. Look at Tony. I'll look at Tony for that one. But I'll be processing this as a joint permit application if it comes in. But this is a commercial.
And there would be additional survey fees, potentially, for a JPA.
Well, it doesn't cost anything to apply. We do run an ad for them. Okay. There's a cost. And then there's a cost at the end, just like this one, of the encroachment royalty type fee. Tony wants to weigh in.
Just let me add that, you know, if we go through the joint permit application process, it will be advertised. We'll notify adjacent property owners relative to the specific area that the applicant wants to put cages. I don't know if they'll be able to work something out with them. If they can, that's great. We can move forward and issue it administratively. If there's protest and they can't work out a compromise of where cages will go, that protested application will be back before you. 6 months should allow us to sort that out and determine whether it's got to come back to you or not. But it could be back in front of you as a protested application if they can't work out some cage location with the shoreline property owners.
And in the meantime, the applicants still have that other reduced lease that's just downriver, so they can at least begin getting operations started. Well, just trying to help find a path forward.
But if you do deny this without any additional caveat in the motion, there is the possibility someone else could apply for this within a day or two.
All right, so I would amend my motion to indicate that the application be denied, but the property be reserved for future SAV proliferation, or whatever you call it, for a period of 6 months. Or help me out here.
Well, the commission has in the past denied an application, and then as part of the motion or as a subsequent action thereafter, designated an area as not to be leased. They have done it open-ended. They've done it with some time periods. That's not what you're suggesting. At least that's not what I heard. You're suggesting that the commission deny this and say at least for 6 months or some period of time, this area be designated as a SAV restoration area. I'm not sure then we'd want to accept a joint permit application for an area that the commission is encumbered.
Mr. Cedron, let me help you out here. I think what you're trying to do here is deny the lease application and to set aside the ground as unavailable for lease for 6 months as the applicant works with staff to submit a joint permit application to get a permit here to put cages in a specific designated area.
Right. Isn't that what I said?
Well, and I would defer to your counsel, who appears to be studying the law book, to make sure that
nothing good ever comes of that.
Yeah.
But the commission has designated areas as not to be leased. So I don't, hopefully that's not contrary to the code, because it's happened in the past.
I was a little concerned, but I think you're okay with saying we're designating this as not to be leased, because it's permissive. It's not required that certain waters be open for or be leased. I think you're okay.
We have a regulation that doesn't, we don't take applications in restricted water classification anymore. We use it. And that's passed the mustard, apparently. We got a regulation.
Yeah.
There's a case that goes all the way back to the 40s of a whole creek that the commission deemed as an area that should not be leased.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
But on our books.
Mrs. Luss.
Sorry. Just to clarify, so once there's a permit application in place, or once the permit, if there has been approved, then that precludes other people from taking up, from applying for that area, or what about the surrounding areas? I'm still concerned that you get a permit to put cages in certain parts, and then someone comes behind and tries to take up the same piece of ground.
So if the motion, as I understand it, amended, is this area not to be leased for 6 months, then we get a JPA, we process it, we approve it or we don't approve it.
Mm-hmm.
Say we approve somewhere, then after 6 months, the rest of this area, we would never lease where the permit is, the delineated area that we permitted, unless it was to the same people.
But someone could potentially apply for the same ground again.
Same people could apply for it, somebody else could apply for it. That's why I said the commission has in the past actually designated areas open-ended, just as areas not to be leased, until such time the commission decides they change their mind. But this would accommodate what you're trying to do here, I think, for the current applicant. But it would not set this area aside any longer than 6 months as not to be leased. Someone else could apply.
I'd like to hear some
Mr. Cedron
discussion about making it a permanent no lease. That way, if they apply for a permit, they can get whatever land that's reasonable, that the staff thinks is reasonable, and then nobody can come behind them and lease up the land around them. I'd like to hear comments on that.
Mr. Bell.
As Mr. Stagg said, I think we've done that in certain areas at times. it is a pretty sharp 180 from what seemed to be practices since I've been on the commission the last 3 years. Whereas we look at these things on a case-by-case basis, recognizing that environmental factors can change, sand moves, creek mouths close off, what was once going to be a development no one actually moved into. So we keep things open. I think the industry is aware that you have to pay attention to newspaper advertisements. I would advise the applicant to watch and see if anyone else applies for this, and if they do, to come object to it and say, if anyone's going to get it, I should have gotten it. As well as, I think, as we can see, the homeowners and residents are all very aware to pay attention. That's why we fought for that notification bill last year, to make sure that everyone in the area is notified and has an equal, fair hearing to do what we're doing right now. And I'm always just hesitant to set something aside permanently. I think it's a very hard thing to undo once it's done.
Mrs. Lusk.
I would agree with that, and particularly in dynamic areas, which it's been stated that this is part of the reason why people, I think, put in for large ground applications, is because the flexibility that allows them to move their cages depending on water flow, environmental factors, and that sort of thing. So definitely uncomfortable with permanently setting aside ground. I'm also still a little bit uncomfortable with limiting to a very specific area in an area that for aquaculture, in an area that maybe is more dynamic. But I'm not exactly sure where I am on that.
All right, well, let's back up. We have a motion on the table from Mr. Zedra, which I believe paraphrased is, we're going to deny the lease application, set aside the entire area that was applied for as unleasable for 6 months to give the applicant a chance to work with staff with a joint permit application to establish an area to put cages with a permit. And that was the second by
me,
Mr. Neal.
You also kept looking at Chad to make a motion, but Chad didn't make a motion.
Mr. Ballard.
I'll make a substitute motion then.
Substitute for Mr. Ballard.
From just talking this through, I think the set-aside's unnecessary. I would move we just deny the application. I think we're more than fair with the first one. And someone else might apply for it, and the applicant has the right to monitor that application, protest it, and come back here and say, you should have given it to me if you're going to give it to anyone. So I think we've got that protection in place already, and we don't need to complicate it with a sunsetting set-aside. So I would just make a substitute motion to deny the application.
That's
in this
a
area.
Proper substitute motion by Mr. Ballard, and it takes precedent to deny the lease application. Is there a second to the substitute motion?
So moved.
Second by Mr. Tankard. That right. Motion now has precedent and is the motion on the table. Mr. Frantz.
And then they could still apply for a permit, right?
They could. Mrs. Lusk.
And they could also still reapply, cut it up themselves and reapply in a different manner that might make more sense.
That is
for
true
the community.
As well. We have a proper substitute motion, properly seconded on the table here. Call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. The motion passes. After great struggle, the application is denied, but there is still hope for the Bryces. Thank you all for coming all this way and waiting all this time to have such a civil discussion. I appreciate it all. Thank you all.